rule 14. This is basically American hospital, American doctors checking on you, presumably having recovered to a degree. If you'd been in a British hospital, you'd probably been sent back up the line, or back to your unit.
I would imagine as soon as you were up on your feet and able to walk about and salute, you would have been back. The Americans are a bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? They were a bit more,
they used psychiatry
and they were a bit more helpful towards you, as it were, and thought that you should have some more recuperation. And actually, they said we should go back to Blighty, but our people wouldn't let you. Consequently, eventually was transferred up to this hospital. Came back to the American hospital for maybe another week, I think. I think they decided what they were going to do, and then word came through that they were going back up to Tunis. It was just a matter of going to the hospital and getting a bit of paper, and then onto a train journey, which was a bit of a nightmare. We ended up eventually in Algiers, but I think we were tramping about for about a week in cattle trucks, just as and when we could get food, etc. Eventually ended up in Algiers. Rather strange, at the same camp that we'd arrived at when we landed in Algiers. And we were just a whole load of lost sheep. The far better sent us home. We could have been maybe more used to British industry or something, you know, the war effort, because there was thousands down there at Maison Carrie. I don't know how many thousands, but thousands there, all waiting, well, most of them waiting to be posted back to their units or to new units, and they just didn't know what to do with you. Just a waste of time, waste of manpower, and total.
That mustn't have helped you.
Well, it didn't, because people got absolutely cheesed off after having been in a disciplined unit, and you were just cheesed off, and they were just messing you about. You know, you were on guard and you were on patrol, and they just didn't know what to do with you. Eventually, I was selected out with other crowds and went to 66 Garrison at Constantine as a driver. After all these months and time, trained at Bransmouth as a driver, right, they found a niche I could be a driver, and I was posted to 66 Garrison HQ as a driver. And I'd known the Catholic father around for about 3 months, I think it was. A very nice chap, McCabe, who had been right up through the desert, and he wanted to, he was posted back to Blighty, and he wanted to take me back with him, but no, they wouldn't, no. Again, he's down here as a driver. And he went off, and he went round to see my mother when he got home. He belonged Newcastle area, you know, so he went to see her and told everything was all right.
Well, what kind of tasks were you giving? You were driving him. You were driving him where?
Well, he was the senior chaplain to the RC, senior chaplain. I'm C of E, actually, you know, but don't ask me how this came about. But, there was three chaplains there, a Methodist, C of E, and an RC. And I think I was just allocated to be his driver. And he used to do tremendous journeys. We'd go from Constantine down to Algiers, up to Blida, down into Biskra in the desert. And it was very exciting because he and I travelled hundreds of miles every week visiting these units, you know. You got to know quite a lot of people and the different regiments and so on, and it taught you very well. I suppose it was good rehabilitation, really, just doing something that you enjoyed. Looking after the vehicle and whatnot, and I drove him for a long while. But,
when he left, what happened to you then?
What was happening was not happening. The army was in Italy now, you understand, and they were decommissioning all the places in North Africa. And this is what the garrison was doing. And they handed over to a town major who was a man with about maybe 21 staff. The garrison moved on, decommissioned somewhere else. And this is what it was. These officers were doing this by way of handing stuff back to civilians. The garrison moved up to Bourne from Constantine. We took over as town major, and then eventually we moved up to Bourne. Again, I was left with the town major. We moved up to Bourne and the town major staff. got round now to somewhere at the end of 1944 time. And I remember we had Christmas there, and over into the next year. Again, was in the driver's pool there, but at that period I was sent to drive for the SIB, Special Investigation Bureau. Don't ask me why, it just happened. The town major's staff, I was driving for them for a while, you know, 2 or 3 weeks or something. And then I was given orders to take someone down to Algiers. It's about 600 miles or something. And we drove down there, and we're at the headquarters in Algiers. Again, on driving duties all the time, driving people about, which eventually came to, I think it was about the March in 45. We had to go to Italy, back to Italy. So,
and was this still with the Special Investigation?
I'd left those and came down to Algiers to the British Troops North Africa, I think it was called CMF headquarters. I'm just mentioning here, it was March, yes, FFIs, and Saturday the 24th of March, climbed aboard Villa Dioran and set sail after tea. It was absolutely terrible, that boat. It was like it was supposed to be equivalent to our Queen Mary, or, you know, but it had no buoyancy, whatever. It was a terrible boat. Anyway, we arrived in Naples a couple of days after, and I was on my way to the 419 field security, but I was chasing them all over Italy, I think, before I got there.
And what were you doing with them when you reached them?
About the field security. Again, well, I was. They had a Jeep, 2 1500 weight, and about 10 motorbikes, I think. And I was in charge of the transport and driving the field security officer, the captain Og, about. Mainly, that was the thing. But with these people, they the war collapsed in early May, as you know, and we were flooded with refugees coming down from Germany, and there was Germans, and their task was sorting these out, checking that there was nobody that shouldn't be coming down, which was a ginormous task. I remember one day we were in a field, and they had these thousands of refugees from all over the Europe, and they were checking them and passing them out into a field at the other side of the road. And there, people were getting them into trucks and taking them back up into Austria and places like that. You know, they were supposed to be going back to Yugoslavia and way up to Hungary and France and everywhere. Indeed, some of them came back again. You know, they just didn't want. I don't think they could realise that the war was finished, and then, you know, they'd come away down south to escape. That was one task they were doing, and.
Well, many of these people from forced labour camps that have been
they were from everywhere. Anything you could think of, they'd been. Some of them had terrible tales, you know. I mean, I wasn't interrogating anything, but I was there watching them, and the field security chaps were, you know. And
were you looking for fascists and
up in for fascist Nazis. They had a big filing cabinet, you know, with filing. Don't ask me where they got them from, but they had this filing cabinet on certain people that were wanted. And everybody that's come through with their passports and identity cards, whatever, they were checked against these filing cabinets. And they did pull a load out, no doubt about it. And they were handed over to the military, like, you know. Some of them we put into my job, into the truck, and they were away to the prison. And they were held there and eventually sorted out, you know, at a later date. But
these could have been war criminals.
War criminals and all sorts. There was all sorts there, you know.
Did you get involved with the Cossacks being caught up in Austria?
We went up eventually to Udine. We were going to go to Venice, and we got word on our way up to push on to Udine and take over the German SS headquarters. And we went up to up into Austria, just over the border, and the Cossacks were there, and we were actually in the middle of it. And I can see them now. Eventually it became a transit camp, getting our blokes away home for leave, you know, land leave. But at that point it had been a big German camp, and these Cossacks were flying up and down on the horses and waving their swords. Eventually they were put in the trucks, and they were supposed to be going to be getting something in Yugoslavia. But I think, I don't know, we heard all sorts of tales what happened. They were put on these trucks and off they went. They were going mad for 2 or 3 days at this camp, you know, they were feeding them, and they didn't go back to Russia because they'd been fighting with the Germans against the Russians. And I remember them being put into the trucks, and we were glad we heard the sigh of relief when they got them on, because there was no way we could have contained them. They had to call the other army in, like, but they would just let them have their own head, sort of thing. Eventually they got in the trucks, and
they have family with them,
there was wives and children and all sorts there. We didn't get involved with who was where, what. They were at the camp, and they just kept them food, and they were supposed to be in transit going, and the tale was that they were going to give them a part of Yugoslavia just inside of Austria. So
I think many of them finished up back with the Russians, so they were evidently
eventually got so. No, they were shot, killed, and whatnot. I don't think a lot of them got very far, quite often.
They didn't suspect when they moved that was happening to them.
I don't think they did, no, I don't know. In my view, they didn't anyway, but there's been all sorts of tales in hindsight after that, but that was one escapade that we were involved with 419 Food Security.
Croats and Tito, that was another problem
now,
in that area, wasn't
now
it?
Down at the other end, from Udine, we were involved in Trieste, and we had a battalion of, I think it was the Beds and Hurts were down at Trieste. But I was involved in a lot of cloak and dagger work there. We went into Yugoslavia 2 or 3 times at night. We brought one occasion, we brought a scientist out, little chap with a long beard, who had been involved with all sorts of scientific things, and they interrogated him. And about 3 or 4 nights later, Alan Catley and I was the chap. He was a professor from Worcester College, linguist, you know, and he had been in his escapade in the desert in a tank, and he was a sole survivor of a tank being on fire. And at that point they were asking for people to go into field security, and he went in. Now he used to go to Deulali at times, and when I first joined the section and got very friendly with him, and they thought, oh well, this bloke can keep an eye on him, I think. And Captain Ogg asked me to, you know, thought it was a friendly with him, yes. We sort of keep an eye on him, and sometimes he goes off, just go with him and make sure no harm comes to him, which he used to do. He used to go off for days on end, and we'd come out about the time we went back to the unit, you know. But he was brilliant at interrogation, and he was interrogating this chap and we went 3 or 4 nights after and brought his wife and daughter, and I think it was his wife's mother. We went into Yugoslavia and brought them out. We had to put civilian clothes on after we went in an army uniform, and we brought them out. And he was interrogated at great length, and eventually the information that was coming out was being sent down to headquarters at Naples and to London, and word came I had to take him down to Naples, and they were flown to America. One of these things that the Americans would get the benefit of his science, I suppose, anyway. Nothing to do with me. I wasn't in a position to argue. But I took him down to Naples and with his family, and we had him there for a few weeks, of course. Another very interesting night whilst we were there, we'd been out to Puccini Opera House to see an opera. One of the lighter moments. You know, the war's well over now, but we are still knee deep getting hold of people. We came in one night at this big house, big lounge, and there sat in the middle this bloke. I swear to this day, it was Hitler. Captain Nob said to me, and he stopped and he said, "It's the painter." And I says, "Yeah." And we went cold, you know, and all this, and interrogated him in great length. The lads did, you know. And I'm sure in my mind it was Hitler, but they had him there for 2 or 3 days. He had a suitcase full of money, American, British, French money, and he was supposed to be a peddler selling laces and elastic. He had all that in his case. Now, you don't make money like he was carrying there. And
well, Hitler was dead then, of course. He'd been
well, he was supposed to be. We hadn't been told at this point, you see. And this is why I still think it was a myth that it was Hitler that was in the bunker. Nobody will convince me, didn't he? Because that was him in that room. And the captain, well, he got instructions again from intelligence headquarters at Naples. Can't be. Hitler's being found in Mandela. And he was adamant. And I think they would come with a revolver to finish the say to him, "Look, get him away because it isn't Hitler." And we passed him away south. You tell me. One of the mysteries of war, and I still say, my family laughed when I said, we had Hitler and we let him go. He'd likely go to South Africa. And I mean, I don't know how they proved that it was Hitler in his bunker that was on fire. There'd been various tales, but I'm certain we had him that night.
It was an interesting job in its way.
Very, 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 very interesting. There was supposed to be some immediately. The partisans said that, they all come out the woodwork, and we had a load of Italian Secret Service working with us, and we had the Yugoslavians working with us, coming from Trieste, and they were trying to claim Trieste, you know, and the Italians wanted it, and there was all this battle going on. And we had a headquarters down in Trieste, intelligence headquarters, and when he went there, he didn't just drive up to it because nobody knew where it was, but to go secret code into the middle of Trieste, and a chap come there and grabbed us and cloak and dagger and away up the hills, and landed his great big old mastiff type dogs, you know, if they'd have got a hold of it, tore you to bits. But it was all cloak and dagger stuff there. I don't know what was going on there, but it was all involved with Trieste, and I used to get involved by taking the captain all down. It was to be all together, and it was there that they decided. I mean, the partisans come out of the hills. I don't know where they'd been when Hitler was there, like, but they'd been supposed to have done all sorts. They all came out, and we had handing over of all our weapons and all that lot, you know, and a great big parade and a big do. And we got pictures of all that lot, where they were handing over their guns and their weapons, and we were disbanding them. There was still one or two incidents where they wouldn't give up, and we did night raids on the houses and woke them up in the middle of the night and searched them and so on. There was another thing there. There were supposed to be some paintings they'd seen, and they were buried somewhere, you know, in a tunnel somewhere. Well, we had engineers there, and we had Italians there searching for these. And they were never, ever found, but these people were adamant that they'd seen the Germans with them. They'd been taken out of a gallery somewhere, houses and whatnot, and the Dean knows where they were, but they were never, ever found, not in my time. The other thing we were involved with was, you know, remember these two big pillars in Venice with the brass, what do they call them on the top? They're not lions, but they're something like that. They were missing, the Germans had stolen. And we got to know, through interrogating people, they knew where they were, and we were instrumental in them being recovered and replaced there. So just a little bit of history. If you have your there in Venice, you know, that's where Bob saw those back. Now we had a very, very interesting time there with these. They're never a dull moment, you know.
And be there until you were demobbed, were you?
Right there till I was demobbed. The word came one day, there was a message, a telegram. Why hadn't we replied to this? We were a mob on our own, you know. 14 to 16 of us together, and nobody ever asked questions and blah, blah. Nobody interfered in any shape or form. And Captain Ogg said, well, what do you know about this, Ellison? And I said, nothing at all. We'd better go down to the signals office down in the town. And we went there and I said, well, you got a message last week wanting driver Ellison for Class B release. The railway wanted him back, and I said, I'm joking, you know, after all this time. So what's the situation? I said, well, what's it all involved in? He said, will you get released, you know? I'd been home previous to this in September and got married, you know, but this was now March time of the next year, 6 months after. And
so it was 1946, we're talking
46 now, beginning of 46. Been married, making arrangements indeed for Edith to come out to Trieste because they'd got some flats there and they were letting the army have them. Oh, well, being experienced coming out, and as far as I knew, it was going to be another 12 months or 18 months before you got demobbed with your group. That was happening. But anyway, back to the message. They said, oh, well, you go out and you just sign out and you're out. You're out on Class B release. Never heard of it before. We're out early. So I said, well, right, let me out. And I was on the way within the fortnight to be demobbed.
Where were you demobbed?
Somewhere near Chester. It was, I don't know what they call, Satan Camp, I think, or something like that. It was we came by train right through Milan and across country to Dieppe, came into New Haven, and then we went, there was a castle there, I think we were in there for about two or three nights, and passed us over towards Chester to this camp. Kept you hanging on there for 3 or 4 days, did a couple of guards there, which was, you know, just to keep you in the hand, I think, and eventually they give you your papers and went and got your civvy suit and all this lot, and the way home finished.
Very you got your money that was owing to you?
We got a cheque, but the remainder of the money came later, you know, about that week or fortnight, they cashed it all up. And I should have asked then, actually, what about my corporal's pay, but I never did. I thought, let me get out, I've had enough.
What was the date? Did you recall the actual date that you were demobbed?
Yes, it was, where am I? Where are you? Did I have it down somewhere? No.
I think you said March when you moved from Italy, around about that time, end of March.
We arrived at this transit camp on the 4th, so we're still not going out. We're on a 24-hour guard and dismounted about 9 o'clock on the 5th of April. Yes. And they gave us £5, drove £5, a lot of money. Went to bed early, up at 5:30 on the Saturday morning, and at the demob centre by 12 o'clock, and got home by 10 o'clock at night. That was on the Saturday, the 6th of April, 1946.
And you say that you'd been through the process then of going through and getting civilian clothing?
That's on a Saturday, we got all that, yes. Arrived at the demob centre, and fitted up, and the mummies would have got away sooner, but I was always told that not just to take what they give you. And they were giving me like a grey flannel suit, and I didn't like it, and I said, no, no, I understand, I can get a better one. And after a bit of fuss, and the sergeant was brought and whatnot, they gave me a, took me to another room, and I got a navy blue one with like a red stripe in, and nobody would believe it was a demob suit. That made a fuss.
I mean,
according to the rules and regulations, you had to be suited with everything you got. Well, it was just like going in the army. There's your hat, there's your coat, there's your suit, get out, you know. And I said, no, I wouldn't work in one of them suits. The grey flannel thing with a white stripe in, you know, horrible. And it was in the 1930s somewhere they brought from a market stall. Anyway, they got a one here sort of thing and took me through into this other room. There's one or two more there. And I got this suit. It was quite a decent one as far as the demob went. A Macintosh and a Trilby hat.
What happened to your army uniform?
You're allowed to take that with us. You were in it, actually, you know, and you just went home with it because, actually, we were still on reserve. And we had to sign a paper that went out all this. Took some of the equipment off it, I don't know exactly how much, but some of it went in. But your army top coat and your doings, it ended up eventually being dyed, and I used to work in it, you know, it was a good work suit. Yes, very good.
And you, looking back on it now, what was the best side of being in the army during the Second World War?
Well, comradeship was one of the main things that you found. You met some good mates and made good friendships. And we saw quite a lot of places that we'd never have seen, you know, travelling about. And the battle areas, you know, you never seemed to talk about them afterwards. It was always the good times you talked about. You remember them. Odd times you talk about, you remember when we were so and so and this sort of thing, but by and large you just talked about the good things, and it was like a big holiday really, except that you're away from home so long. And but we did see places. I mean, I did, being in the interesting position of driving these officers about who had a free hand. I mean, in Italy, I think I covered all of Italy, and up into Austria. I went right up to Graz and Vienna and all sorts. We just took off in the cars, and that was it. We had a good time. We had a good time looking around, taking the opportunity that a lot of people didn't have. You know, they weren't in that situation where they could just take off, you know. We went to Venice a few times for weekends and whatnot. Our sister section was there, and we had an open invitation. Two or three of us would go down Friday till Monday, you know, spend the time going around and being fed by them. They were in a small hotel, which was actually still in use, but they had rooms off the hotel as their section, and they were very, very good. The people that owned it, you know, I can't remember their names now, the names go out of my mind, but they were very good, the proprietors. We were their friends, you know, and they knew that myself and Catley, for instance, had been through the battles, you know, where the others had been for field security all the time.